Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 377. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing good tonight, Kevin. How about yourself?
You know, it's going. That's, not really anything crazy good happening, nothing crazy bad happening. It's right. Just an evening, which is kind of nice.
Any Columbus jealousy of Cleveland tonight?
No, because a lot of people are Cleveland fans here. I would say that the fan bases in Columbus go Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, as far as like size of, you know, fan bases. So yeah, no, not really jealousy, just because they don't, I mean, we have the NHL, but we don't have any other, major sport here.
Right.
It's just, Columbus is the larger city now, but, you know, it traditionally hasn't been. So, I mean, I think that's part of the reason why those teams are still there. Like, and I don't think they're ever going to move either.
No.
Well, I shouldn't say that since Cleveland did move when I was going to school at Kent State.
Oh, yes, they did.
But I don't think at this juncture, like, I know that that happened, but I just fully doubt that it would really happen again. I know that they're trying to get training camp down here for the Browns too, actually. And, the Cavaliers have started to play almost an annual game down here at, Ohio State's, arena, the Schottenstein Center. So, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of ties to, Cleveland, around these parts. So yeah, no jealousy. Mostly, everyone's kind of pumped about it.
Nice.
So yeah, everyone was not so pumped Saturday night, but it was funny. I did not really catch the mood of the city that night because I was not here and not paying attention to the game either. So
right.
It was kind of funny getting a phone call from the wife's father telling us that Penn State was winning. Because we had all left the Penn State household when it was 21 to 7 or 21-10. Yeah, it was 21-10 when we left. So that was quite a shock to us that this was all going on too.
Right.
Yeah, and it's double Cleveland today, too, since the Cavaliers opened defense of their NBA championship this evening. So Cleveland has a lot going on, and I mean, it's I couldn't believe how much Twitter feed information or video I was getting. Just when I popped on, I saw a hockey game on my left-hand side, and I was watching the first two runs scored that Cleveland, the Indians, scored tonight. It's hard to get away from the video these days. I guess at some juncture we'll have to add some version of video to the site.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to be excited to see what we're looking at right now.
But to get away from the sports talk and get along to well, the normal topic of conversation around these parts, particularly this show, wrestling. And there has been plenty of wrestling as usual to talk about. There's plenty of TNA to talk about, but we have chosen to, well, at least talk about Hell in a Cell first, because there is a historic match It does seem like there's the possibility that Charlotte and Sasha will headline it. Like, nothing's really been said either way. The way Mick Foley worded it made me think it was going to headline it, but there's been no concrete information, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it's definitely a topic of debate. I believe that this is all from Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Radio today. He was just saying that, there are people who feel that Sasha and Charlotte should either go on first or go on last. Because if it goes on, like, in the middle of the show, nothing will be able to top it, and people might actually get up and leave. Which, to that I say, if that would be the case, and that is the most anticipated match, then yes, it should go on last. Now, of course, I can see how, you still want your Universal Championship to be your top men's championship to be, the main focus of a company. I mean, I don't think that'll ever change.
Right.
And, maybe just throwing the women in the main event this one time and then just bringing them back down to the mid card maybe seems pointless. But you know what? That Randy Orton Bray Wyatt match closing No Mercy, I think that lowered the bar for what we considered a main event match now. The match that should get close the show by far. So I don't know if I see that point now. I do think that, for the purposes of this show, and it wouldn't be every show, certainly, but for the purposes of the show, I think Sasha and Charlotte should close. Unless there is concern that they won't be able to live up to the hype, or that there is fear that they will actually will try.
Yeah, I mean, they really could close the show, and I mean, I think in some ways it would be wise to have the two title matches, honestly. Well, oh, they're all title matches, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all title matches, but I mean, no one's putting Rusev and Roman Reigns in that class. Although, I know we're gonna go probably through the matches one by one, but I mean, this Rollins Owens issue just seems so cold, even compared to Rusev and Roman Reigns, I think. There's just something, these two just don't, just, even their in-ring chemistry is surprisingly lacking. The story hasn't been very good. I didn't really like their first match against each other, so yeah.
Yeah, like I think that was one of those things that I hinted at, but maybe didn't flesh out in the almost live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw. Like, Seth Rollins has a beef with Stephanie, but she really hasn't shown a whole lot of disloyalty to him in any way. Like, she says she doesn't know what her husband was doing.
Yeah, she's still trying.
And
That's one of the problems. The storyline still hasn't advanced past her playing undercover babyface, and she's got Mick Foley wrapped around her finger, but Seth Rollins sees right through her, but he doesn't really have any evidence either. I mean, he's
Yeah.
probably right, but he doesn't have any facts backing it up.
Yeah,
Triple
and I
H has
mean, she hasn't acted
10 seconds at
shady.
the end of.
Yeah, she hasn't acted shady. Yeah, Triple H hasn't shown up at all to, explain his actions. It just is. It's just kind of ringing hollow, like the reasonings for the feud.
Yeah, it's ring reasoning, reason it's resonating hollow, as you said. It's this championship is still only 2 months old. That plays parts in it. Kevin Owens' win was kind of out of nowhere after he had been in the mid card for a while. Rollins kind of got off to a shaky start as a baby face. I guess his promos, they've improved, but for the most part, since the screw job finish in the four way match, Rollins has still, for a baby face, come off very whiny and entitled. Yeah, I think it's kind of a it's been the. I hate to say I use the term because I think I use it a little much, but it's a perfect storm for just a match that just doesn't have a lot of heat.
Yeah, and I guess that was the one that I was thinking that one should be first. Like, the Reigns and Rusev one, it's one of those matches that they just kind of beat on each other. It's two big guys just beating the snot out of each other. Like, you don't really need much more than that.
Yeah, and it's, from a traditional standpoint, it's actually the match that most belongs in the cell or in a cage. They just, every time they're around each other, they fight all over the building. That's one of the reasons, either the Keith the Wrestler's in or keep interference out. Now, I guess in the Owens-Jericho match, you kind of have the issue of Jericho getting involved in their last match, but they're not playing that up that well. And Sasha and Charlotte is about this history thing. It's almost like they're looking forward to having fun in the cells, the way that's been played up. I mean, it's been played up the way, you know, how I feared it would. More of the company, as I think I said it last week, more of the company patting themselves out of the back for putting two women in there than setting up a solid story for why these two women want to be in this brutal structure.
Yeah, and even this week, like, I liked the mic work that Charlotte and Sasha did, but I'm not sure that it really changed the narrative at all, or if it's just too late to really change it at all.
Right, right. I mean, their feud has just, it's not been escalating levels of brutality. That's the big part that I think it hurts this match. I mean, the two women's feuds on SmackDown have more, you know, anger and hate to them than this feud is showing. It's been a competitive rivalry. So, I mean, in a competitive rivalry, you know, Flair and Steamboat never had a cage match, or at least they did earlier, because I know they feuded multiple times for us. But their '89 feud was, they never had a cage match. I mean, because it was, there was never that escalating level of violence. And so, in that case, it does ring hollow as far as the buildup is concerned. But once again, I do think, I mean, my biggest concern is they're so into, you know, promoting this as that match is history, that they won't be able to help themselves from having it end with the two of them teary-eyed embracing after the match. It's not, I know it's, they went that route in NXT a couple of times, but it really shouldn't be. Especially because in the Raw Women's Division, Charlotte's the only heel, so they really can't have her showing that kind of, you know, weakness emotionally, I don't think. But I think that might be where they're going.
Oh, dear goodness, I hope not. Yeah, it just doesn't need to happen. And I'm trying to think of what else, if there's any other avenue with that matchup. But I mean, I think that about says it. Like, I think we talked about it last week, where we think they have a good match, the cell, and you know, this pretty much just repeat. But you know, the cell itself doesn't really, it doesn't need to be that rough on you. Like, you can have a fairly standard match in one of those things and just toss in a couple of getting thrown against the cage spots and everything will be fine.
Right, yeah. They can pretty much have their match. You know, the cell offers space on the floor to do some extra stuff and do a little bit of, you know, dives and things of that nature. And yeah, I hope they're not planning on, I'm fairly certain that they're not going outside, but who knows? I kind of hope not, but of course, if it happens, it's not like I'm not going to be entertained by it as long as somebody doesn't get seriously hurt either. But yeah, I mean, now granted, the last cell match did have the huge cage dive, and the cell match before that, you know, was with Undertaker and Lesnar, did have, you know, was probably the bloodiest match in WWE in years and years, but, you know, that's, that one was, you know, the question of whether or not they went out on their own, or if the company, you know, was, you know, wink wink or whatnot. But I'm fairly certain that they're not going to try to sneak in the Blade or do any hard way blood or anything like that. I'm pretty sure that they are on a strict ban from things like that.
Yeah, and again, to go back to it, the only match up really in this cell that would kind of call for that would be Rusev and Reigns anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I like the build up of that match. I love Rusev. I mean, Rusev has been defending his family for months against this bully, this disrespectful punk. I mean, remember, the feud started because Roman Reigns interrupted Rusev one night. Rusev really has never done anything to Roman Reigns first. This whole feud, it's really awesome.
And Rusev, even he can't do a long promo, but he just has a way with words that is so picture perfect foreign person terminology that that I hope he never becomes too American to lose that.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, Rusev is great. Roman Reigns is always, you know, risen to the occasion in big matches. So yeah,
I think that Reigns feels a little more comfortable now. Too, like, he's kind of been a dick about the whole situation. Like, but he was the guy that interrupted Rusev and his wedding celebration, and he's kind of continued to be a dick and hasn't really been apologetic about it. He's like, tough shit. I'm just gonna beat you up again.
Yeah. I mean,
and at least it's a consistent character. And like I said, like I feel like he's just been a little more comfortable, in his own skin, which is a good thing. Like, cause I've got to imagine still at some point he's going to, get around to being on top of the company again.
I'm pretty sure. We haven't seen the last of Roman Reigns in the main event. I am very confident of that.
So, a sustained period like this will do him wonders. Because I guess it doesn't really matter whether it's a prediction or not, I guess. But I guess I don't see Rusev winning that one. Just because...
No, I don't. I see Reigns continuing on as U.S. champion.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's just more credence to Reigns moving a step up again, and he is one of the few guys that they've kind of kept the intermediate titles alive recently, and he's definitely a guy that can carry that and make it important.
Yeah, definitely.
And that, I guess that covers all the Hell in a Cell matches.
Somehow, yeah, it does.
That's a nice tidy bow, because, was there any, was there anything else from Raw? But there is definitely one thing that I personally found this segment to be extremely hilarious.
Oh, it was hilarious. I know where you're going.
My enjoyment level did not evidently transfer to one of Vincent Kennedy McMahon. supposedly from some sources. But Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman's segment did not go as planned.
No. And I'm pretty sure that was a directive that came. You know, the way they played it was probably a directive right from Vince. Paul had to do what he was told there. I mean, I probably didn't even think that, you know, he was in a position to change course in the middle of it. You know, the idea of Brock being booed in Minneapolis, which I guess technically is not his hometown, but it's where he went to college. And they, the people love him as one of their own. Yeah, to try to heal Brock Lesnar in Minneapolis, I have no clue what they were thinking. It didn't work. They've got Goldberg coming back next week. I don't even know what he's supposed to respond to.
Yeah, I would hope that maybe they will do an at-home segment or, you know, one of those UFC-style sit-down interviews with Brock to maybe explain things more without the crowd there. But,
Brock definitely. Those work.
I mean, Lesnar has been a face pretty much the whole time he's been back. And this is something that, like, not by the company's doing, but by the crowd reaction, he has been a babyface.
Yeah, he's almost, the only time he's ever really been booed is when he broke the streak, and every time they bring up that he broke the streak. That's it. That's the only thing people don't like. They were with him when he destroyed John Cena. They were with him when he was beating up, he was destroying Roman Reigns. The only time even half the crowd isn't with him is when he was going against Undertaker. That was it. I mean, there's no one else who they put against Brock. I'm not sure exactly how I would just remember to describe the crowd reactions during the Dean Ambrose match, but I mean, for most, Brock gets cheered.
Yeah, so to think that somehow that was going to be different this time around, regardless of city, to me is complete insanity.
There are plenty of cities that you could probably, you might, well, after what happened last week, I mean, there are plenty of cities that Goldberg would probably get a better reaction than Brock in. Minneapolis definitely isn't one of them.
I think that part's interesting, and you noted how Toronto was not one of Goldberg's better cities. And that was the other thing that did get confirmed, I believe sometime today, actually, that the match was going to be at Survivor Series. I imagine that they were supposed to get that information across last night, and they did not.
I'm sure, yeah. And then Vince got word to just leave the ring. I mean, that was an infamous live TV bad moment. I mean, it was something to behold.
yes, it was. I mean, because it just ended so awkwardly.
The work they went to find the one guy in the upper deck, Channing Goldberg, was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, man. But there really isn't much to say about that. Like, again, like, I don't really care what happens in the build-up to this match. I'm looking forward to the match.
Yeah. I'm worried about how many times these two guys are going to be on the show. Or at least Goldberg. I don't think there's any need for him to be on this show on Monday. This Halloween show, it's going to be a low-rated episode. Maybe Goldberg can bring it up a little bit, but what do you have him do? I mean, that he didn't do last week. Maybe you have him have some low-level guy like, you know, Bo Dallas or whoever, you know, interrupt him and take a spear and a jackhammer. But other than that, there's nothing really you can only hurt what he accomplished last week, I think, the more you have him on TV. Except for maybe that last week.
Or some type of a contract signing type of situation.
Right. So yeah, and of course it's the Halloween episode. So God, I hope they don't put a wig on him again.
Yeah, that is not necessary at all. And I was gonna try to transition with the whole wig comment, but I can't even find a good one. 'Cause I mean that's just kind of what that segment is. Like there isn't a lot to talk about that segment. But SmackDown continues to be quite enjoyable.
Oh, yes.
And tonight really was not an exception. I knew that at the top of the night when James Ellsworth asked to be in Dean Ambrose's corner, that things were not going to end well for Mr. Ambrose.
No, I thought Ellsworth was just straight up going to be in the turning.
Little did I expect a no chin music from James Ellsworth on AJ Styles to cause the
Yeah,
disqualification.
that was very well done. I like that finish. It definitely sets up things going forward. I mean, there's a long time before there's going to be, we've got, I think, like a month and a 10 days or more before the next time SmackDown's on pay-per-view again with a show that's going to be headlined by a world championship match. So they've got still quite a ways, to keep things moving between Ambrose and Styles. So, I mean, this is just another roadblock for Ambrose. He's got hurdles to overcome to get his next shot. James Ellsworth, the lovable loser screwing things up. There's directions you can go there, absolutely.
Yeah, James Ellsworth is thanking someone right now.
Oh, he's cute. He has to be. I mean,
He has to
really
be
is amazing.
thanking the internet for keeping a job, honestly.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Only in this day and age can something like this happen. And, I mean, you can say what you want about hipster irony and all that, but it's working out for James Ellsworth. He's selling shirts.
He's getting the merch, baby. Getting the
Yeah,
merch.
yep. He definitely is.
I mean, he's playing his part well. He's not overdoing it. It really works out really well. What else? I mean, everything, the whole time frame, like you said, for the next pay-per-view really is kind of playing for SmackDown, because you can definitely tell, like, Raw was all about the Hell in a Cell hype, but SmackDown is all about the Survivor Series hype.
Right. Yes. All SmackDown basically has to worry about is getting the teams together for Survivor Series, and for now is that. I mean, I'm assuming that the top, male singles wrestlers elimination match is gonna have Ambrose and Styles on the same team, so that should definitely, allow for some interesting scenarios to play out.
Right, and they did have the tag team championship, or the oh yeah, the tag team start qualifying tonight, and your favorite team, the Hype Bros.
Oh, don't even remind me.
I honestly, like, those are the t I don't get them in that kind of facet, but I get them. Like, they represent a a culture that I do not care to be a part of, that I quite frankly really don't want to be a part of, and I'm completely okay with. But I it was kind of funny. Like, I felt like they were getting good reactions, and he actually played in Green Bay, and Green Bay could have cared less. So I did find that kind of interesting. I feel like the crowd's kind of been behind them, and I guess, like I said, I get it with not being wanting to be a part of it, because they're just a couple of meatheads, really.
It's mostly Mojo. It's almost all Mojo for me. I mean, not that I'm a big Zack Ryder fan either, but I've always been able to take or leave him. I can't stand Mojo.
Well, they still are definitely quality wise leg up on what's their names, the Ascension.
That
was not much of a surprise.
I'll give them that much. Yeah, I'll give them that much credit.
What else? Oh, the other tag team. Well, the tag team champions Heath Slater and Rhino are automatically qualified for the Survivor Series team.
Yes, they are, and I mean it'll be interesting because. You know, they're going to Europe for a week. You know, in November, election week, actually, the week of the election. So, Rhino can't go on that tour. So, if they're going to lose, I guess they would lose tonight or maybe next week. But I'm pretty sure the possibility that Rhino could actually win his election and be and be a state representative and tag team champion at the same time, I think that's a little too hard for them to pass up.
Yeah. I mean, they've certainly kept it going, and people are really getting behind Heath Slater at this point. Like, I don't know if people are kind of realizing how great he's been over the years. And he's a pretty good wrestler, I think. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be AJ Styles or anything, but I feel like he can sustain a longer match than the jobber matches he's been involved in for the vast majority of his career.
Yeah. He's good, and the way he's playing this, that, you know, I got kids, I need this job, but he's not really a valiant babyface. He was going to be willing to walk away from a challenge tonight until Rhino, you know, was until Miz called out them for being afraid of male cheerleaders, and Rhino hates male cheerleaders. So I love the look on Rhino's face. It's like, no, we accept. And of course, again, Rhino wins the match. Rhino always wins the match. That's simply, and the one time they lost a non-title match last week, he Slater took the loss. So again, that's definitely something for later.
Oh, they're enjoyable, and Ziggler and Miz, in some ways, just because they've been at each other for, like, I guess most recently it has been for a while. Actually, they kind of needed something to spruce up what was going on between them, and having the tag teams involved has helped move things along in that direction too.
Yeah, I do wonder how long Kenny and Mikey are sticking around, because they were absolutely, you know, dragged out of obscurity, you know, regular jobs. I'm not sure exactly what their long-term status is. I mean, the other two Spirit Squad guys, you know, they literally couldn't reappear for this because
yeah, I mean,
I know Mike Mondo was was working a lot of indies and doing ROH and, you know, for a while, but I hadn't seen his name attached to anything in a while, and Kenny definitely walked away from the business after being let go.
Yeah, well, he's in really good shape for having walked away from the business, so I don't know what he's...
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing.
I don't know what he's doing, but I'm just going to say it might have something to do with being in good shape. And again, like, it's just something good to... It keeps Rhino and Heath Slater away from the Usos and from American Alpha, too, which is kind of useful.
Yeah. I mean, American Alpha, I think, is still the future of this division, but it does. But they're the future. They don't have to be right now.
I guess everyone thought they were going to be the right now, but... Yeah, it hasn't really been a problem. I'm actually kind of surprised. I'm trying to remember when the last time was that they were on.
I think they did singles matches with one of them against one of the Usos. The fact that I can't even remember which one it was, I think it was last week, says a lot. I mean, they haven't featured.
Anytime you're wrestling the Usos, it's not really a bad thing. Just because they've put on good matches with a lot of teams, and they do just as well in singles matches. leading up to that, what else was there on SmackDown that stood out to you?
A couple things. I mean, the latest twist in the Randy Orton Bray Wyatt saga. I mean, they. Not been my favorite storyline by far, but a little bit of a twist tonight with Orton RKOing Kane and giving Bray Wyatt the win and then saying, you can't beat him, join him. I mean, I don't really believe we're going to see Randy Wyatt, but I mean, it's something to, it's a log on the fire in this feud. It's far from the worst thing they've done with this feud.
At least so far, it has been far more believable than when Randy Orton re-entered the fold with the Authority before he ended up feuding with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, that was really some awful. That was awful. God. Randy gets himself involved in some really bad stuff.
Yeah, his character has some versatility in the bad stuff department. That was a pretty interesting thing. Like, I was wondering at first if Luke Harper was in on it simply because... He kind of backed out of the ring pretty easily when Randy Orton came in, which kind of allowed Orton to just RKO Kane easier. Him acting bewildered afterwards. Along with Bray Wyatt, definitely made me, go a different route in the thinking.
I don't see anything in how, Luke Harper back out of the ring. No. I think, Randy Orton's playing mind games with them now.
Again, they have a long time to go with the feud. They needed something, and this is a something. It's a good change in direction to keep the feud fresh. You can have them not wrestle also,
right?
Which is always a useful tool when trying to stretch out a feud. There's only so many times they can face each other in a tag team match.
Right, yeah.
And I'm trying to think. Oh, well, I did enjoy the Columbus native Alexa Bliss. And yes. Becky Lynch.
Yeah, that was a really good segment. Alexa Bliss was really great in it. Becky didn't even really have to do that much, but she is just a naturally likable star, so, you know, all you have to do is, you know, dump heat on her and make fun of her and attack her, and you're good to go for heat. And yeah, it worked really well. I liked it a lot. Once again, a women's feud based on actual, you know, dislike, actual hatred. I'm big thumbs up for that.
Yeah, and I mean, they definitely, it was something that they had started before. Which I'm sure, or at least I hope they will feature in the weeks to come. That because they did have a couple of matches right before Lynch had her emergency, whatever it was.
Yeah. I think they had a non-title match, and well, actually, they had a couple. They had matches against each other even before Backlash, even before they did the six-way match at Backlash. So yeah, this has been going on for quite a while. I mean, they're building up to a big match on SmackDown on November 8th in Glasgow, Scotland. Probably would be worked better off if it was in Ireland, but for Becky Lynch's homecoming. But that's not how the cookie's crumbling here. So,
right.
it should be good, and hopefully they'll you know, I don't know if they'll do. Give them the treatment that Sasha and Charlotte had and actually have the main event that show, but it should be definitely a feature match on that show, and they should get time, and it should be really good.
Yeah, Bliss has been, I guess, a little bit more of a surprise to me because she didn't really have much of a singles role in NXT.
No, really. She really didn't.
So, I've been pleasantly surprised by her. I guess at least with someone like Carmella, I knew that she had the mic skills at least. But I wasn't completely sure about her in-ring skills. It might still be that case, but she's continuing her feud with Nikki Bella, who became the women's captain when she tapped out Natalia with the all new STF finisher.
Yeah, and she did a good version of the STF, better than John Cena. So, I mean, as far as cranking on it and not having any light between your arm and your opponent, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly why the winner of this match was going to be the captain and not the champion, but okay. I mean, that's what the way they want to play it. Fine, I guess. I mean, but I think I would still make sure that it's clearly stated that the champion is the captain of the team.
Yeah, that it does seem a little crazy because I wouldn't think that Becky Lynch would be in her own feud there. Like, as much as SmackDown has done a better job with the women, they haven't been positioned quite as high as Charlotte and Sasha on the the totem pole.
They need Becky on that team. I mean, she'd still be the best wrestler on the team. I mean, they definitely need her on that team. I mean, because if they have her take somebody on, then it's still, you know, hard to, you know, put together a team of five. You take two out of the mix, you know, to say Becky and Alexa out of the mix already.
Oh.
You know, then it's, and Natalya can't be on the team now, either.
Uh, Right. Unless that ends up being an angle in and of itself.
Right. That's possible. That's very possible. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Becky will be on the team. Maybe they tease some dissension between her and Nikki over who should be the captain or what have you. But you know what? I'm sure they'll make the 5-on-5.
It's not
like it really matters who's. It's not like this is real. It's not like it really matters who's the captain.
Oh man, I just started thinking about that meme what was it? People are crying over someone's death on a television show. Did you tell them that it was fake?
Yeah.
With the Walking Dead, I quite enjoyed that one. And that situation made me think about it.
Yeah.
Well, there is a little more time on the show, and I do think that we need to bring up the fun topic.
Oh.
Of TNA, and and their legal woes, which have gone from some level of speculation. It was still just some reporting. It's not like we have the national press on the story of TNA's finances.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think towards the end of last week, after we recorded, it actually looked like TNA had found its new savior, the, you know, Anthem Sports Entertainment, parent company of the Fight Network up in Canada. But apparently it looks like whatever moves that they made with the Fight Network may not have even been legal at all, based on the agreement that she'd already made with Billy Corgan. Oh, yeah, this is amazing. I mean, this woman has basically been running a Ponzi scheme for the last year, and she's finally getting called on it.
Yeah, we had already speculated that maybe Billy Corgan was the smartest man in the room, and so long as he wins this lawsuit, I would have to say that that would prove him correct.
Yeah, I mean,
or the theory correct.
On a sliding scale of intelligence of him actually wanting this company, but.
Yeah, that's a whole different scale.
Yeah, whole different scale. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how things shake out with apparently Billy paid off Aerolux months ago, so they have no current claim on the company. And if, you know, her current moves with the Fight Network, Dixie's current moves with the Fight Network can become invalidated in some way, then I guess, you know, the company's Billy's. Out, then it's freaking hilarious that he basically sent her an email firing her, and then she just decided if we ignore him, he'll go away.
Because within the paperwork it says he is expecting to get the 92.5% of the company that she owns. Which, yeah. Quite obviously, I don't think you need to be a math major. 92.5% would make you the majority owner.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely would. Now, we've been thinking for a while now that she was giving off, you know, 10-15% piece of this company, but it turns out it's not. Apparently, I saw something that said that, let me look at it. I retweeted it earlier.
Oh man, there's just so much gold in that thing. So whichever one you pull out, I'm sure will be fairly priceless.
Yeah, for their percentages of TNA, Aerolux and Anthem bought in at a valuation of $45.3 million. if they each gave $1 million or so apiece. Or more than $1 million, because the total deaths were 3.5. So at least over $1 million. That's funny.
Oh. Oh, man. I don't know what to say at this point. Like, obviously, this is, it's in court, it's being taken seriously.
Yeah, I don't see how, I don't see how they can finagle their way out of this. You cannot argue that you're a solvent company if you have to keep taking these shady loans out. Once again, who even knows if any of the stuff that Dixie's been doing is even legal? And once again, there could still be fraud charges here.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that they got the financing for the tapings, but I mean. Really, there's a solid chance, depending upon how quickly the legal system moves, which is not always terribly fast, that by the time everything airs, it could be Billy Corgan's company.
Yeah, they're going into the court tomorrow afternoon, so yeah, this could all be resolved then.
I guess I missed out on that part of the situation.
Yeah, I believe it's the 26th. The 26th is tomorrow. Yeah, because it was supposed to be last week, and then TNA got a delay. Which, of course, in court cases like this, you can delay and delay and delay forever. when you're the defendant in a case like this, but I don't know how when you don't have the money to compete, that's the whole issue. The company's broke.
So if you
were sued WWE, yeah, they would have the money to outlast you forever if need be. But this is not that. This is TNA we're talking about. They don't have the kind of money to keep delaying a lawsuit and paying the lawyers for the hours and their time to keep this. They keep delaying this into perpetuity. So this might end tomorrow.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it'll be interesting. I think we had said last week that, I mean, it still just seemed like it was a matter of time before something happened.
Oh yeah, it has to happen.
And even if somehow Corrigan doesn't win this lawsuit, I would think, again, with all of the alleged missteps that they've made, that maybe someone will be interested in this. Which could cause larger problems.
Right, yeah. I mean, they've been on borrowed time for at least 2 years since they got booted off of Spike. It's amazing that they've made it this long.
Yeah. So I mean, it's another one of those stay tunes. Like, there isn't much more to say, you know, just because we've kind of covered it. Like, but this just really did, like, it confirmed all the reports about the money owed, the back door dealings. Like, it was all laid out in the lawsuit.
Yeah, so it's like, all right there.
You know, there's no getting around, like, nah, that didn't really happen. The wrestlers at this point, I guess it would be kind of interesting. I mean, allegedly they already wanted Corrigan to be the owner anyway.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that they're kind of hoping that things go that way whenever this court case happens.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure that they want. They feel that they have some hope with Corrigan, and who knows whether they do or not. I mean, because once he wins, I mean, he still has to. The question is: does he assume the debt, or is, or does that Dixie? I mean, it'll be interesting to see. You know, where. So I don't know if I see a scenario where he gets the company, but doesn't assume the debt.
Well, yeah, I would think that that would have to happen, and I mean, it's one of those things where I guess I wonder where he's getting all of his money from too. Like, I know he made some money being a rock star, but did he really make that much money? Maybe he was really good with his money and didn't really spend any of it.
I mean, he's got an estimated net worth of $50 million, which a lot of money, but when a company like this requires $5 to $10 million a year to probably just to operate it, and that's without increasing any expenses or, you know, making a real, you know, that's probably just operating it on a level that it's right now. That's not even trying to grow it without any revenue streams. You could lose $50 million pretty quickly, you know, sinking it into a sinkhole like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. It almost seems like he needs some type of money backup too. Like he's not so rich that you're like, oh, okay, I understand. You know,
right, no, it really isn't. I mean, I think due to a number of issues, the Smashing Pumpkins didn't really survive into this century as a touring act, which is where a lot of, you know, 90s and earlier bands are still out there making money at. I mean, what he went through, what, two different versions of the Smashing Pumpkins, basically, because he's considered such a hard ass to deal with. I think is that the case?
Yeah, I am vaguely familiar, but I do feel like for the most part, everyone found him hard to deal with, and that's why there was a rotating cast of band members around him, which is kind of makes it funny. That a bunch of wrestlers are convinced that they should work for him.
Right.
Maybe he's learned his lesson. Like, people can make the change.
Right.
But
Dixie definitely screwed with the wrong person, as far as someone who's not going to let themselves be made a fool of or lose money on a deal.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it tells you at least how smart Hogan and Bischoff were to cut the ties when they cut the ties. Like, they kind of, not that they were helping matters at all, but they just kind of got out of the Dixie business before the real circus began.
Yeah, I mean, it's still unbelievable. You know, all the things that this company had going for it, especially that Spike TV deal. I mean, how hard is it if Spike TV was paying them $20 million a year, run the company on $15 million and then pocket $5 million? But that's not how things were going. They were still losing money. They were losing money on Spike. They were having issues with pay on Spike. I don't know if you caught any of Bruce Pritchard's podcast this week about where his time in, you know, running talent relations for TNA. There's some damning stuff there, at least about how the company was run, you know, from the, you know, the energy people and how they viewed wrestling. And yeah, it was definitely, that's definitely something to check out, because it's just, says that at one point when they were having pay issues, it wasn't because the company was losing money. It was because for 6 weeks, they forgot to send out checks to wrestlers.
Yeah, I did not listen to it, but if that's what happened, wow. Wow. Like, there's nothing more to say than that.
Right.
You know, that's just, it's the level of incompetence that I suppose I expected from these clowns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just complete incompetence, feeling like you could run people who have no clue how to run a wrestling business or an entertainment business, know, maybe they're successful in they were successful in energy, but that this is a completely different animal. That doesn't translate at all.
Oh man, and yeah, it just didn't at all. And I guess I'm all for a regime change. Like, everyone seems to want TNA not to fold. If they actually have a regime change, you know, I guess it'll at least be interesting to see what happens if Corbin gets
what happens. I mean, it's going to take years and years to reverse the damage that's been done to get to a point where you're back on a better station, getting paid for programming. I'm not sure if that's going to take a long time, unless, you know, Belly's able to, you know, quickly create a product that has a lot of buzz to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I would imagine that the WWE is quite secure with the USA Network, given how much airtime they're getting on a quite large network.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, no one knows exactly what the state. I mean, a big part of the UFC multi-billion-dollar sale was wrapped up in the idea that in 2019 they're getting a $1 billion television deal or some crazy number. And I'm like, yeah, none of that's guaranteed.
Yeah, well, I guess my point was going to be, like, just the enormity of the task. Like, the WWE is drawing less people now. And to try and get back into a spot like Spike TV is going to take a crazy amount of work, honestly.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it does depend on if WWE can ever get hot again, then a lot of people are going to want to get. But right now, WWE isn't considered hot.
Yeah, I mean, as good a job as they've done kind of intermixing with other companies, it's just, you know, the fan base isn't there, or it's just watching it in a different capacity.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe they're just watching it online. Maybe, I mentioned at the beginning how much video you can see just on Twitter. All you need to do maybe is they just watch the highlights on Twitter, because the WWE certainly puts out enough of them just on their own to be able to keep track of the product.
Right. Yeah. You could have to, like, keep track of the product using only the internet. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, talking about the old Twitters, I always use it to promote Stunt Granny Brewing. Tonight's beer of choice was Stunt Granny Brewing Shooting Star Press IPA. Still plenty in the basement, as usual. If anyone's in the area of Columbus, Ohio, you are welcome to a beverage or more out of the supply closet if you ever stop in. Yeah, I'm at DeFrango11 on Twitter. He is at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Everybody, have a good night.
Later.